Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here. I wonder if this is our Calgary-themed rejoiner music. I like it. I'm digging it. It is the Calgary Flames versus the Vancouver Canucks tonight here at Rogers Arena. We're live from the Kintec studio at Rogers Arena. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining us to chat about tonight's opponent for the Canucks, the Calgary Flames. He covers the team for our sister station, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. He is Pat Steinberg. Pat, thank you as always for making some time for us today. How are you?
Good, boys. How are you?
We're doing very well. Looking forward to this one. Always fun when the Canucks and the Flames meet. And, of course, you know, the Canucks looking for a measure of revenge after the Flames beat them in the home opener back in October. Interesting start to the season for the Calgary Flames. I want to start with kind of the biggest news this week, which is, of course, the loss of Anthony Mantha for the season. And, Mantha is one of those players where it just seems to always leave whatever fan base he's playing in front of a little bit frustrated, but also always seems to be at least a little bit effective as well. What is the loss of Mantha going to do for the Flames over the balance of the season?
Well, it's one of those scenarios where I think that the 13-game debut for Mantha as a member of the Flames kind of went the way that a lot of people thought it would. There were some stretches, like the game in Vancouver to start the season. There's their games against the Oilers so far this year, where Mantha's been like a significant difference maker and a big reason why the Flames have had success. And then there's been nights where he was, borderline invisible, if not detrimental to them. He's been devoted to the fourth line. He's been playing with Huberdeau on some nights in more of an offensive role. It's been, the inconsistent rap on Mantha definitely was there in his first month or so as a member of the Flames. But, you still feel bad for a guy that on a really innocuous play in his hometown of Montreal in front of his mom and his grandfather and family, like just the most innocuous collision. And next thing you know, his ACL pops and he's done for the season. You just feel awful for a guy who's on a one-year show-me contract. And, now the future is super uncertain for a 31-year-old guy who has only been able to secure kind of short-term deals over the last little bit. In terms of what it does for the Flames, they had him written in to play with Huberdeau on a regular basis. They signed him because they felt he could be a guy who could really complement Jonathan Huberdeau's game. And as we know, Huberdeau's time in Calgary has been anything but successful for the most part. I mean, it's been a real big story since he was acquired here in the summer of 2022. And he, even though he leads the team with goals right now as they enter this game in Vancouver, it's still been a really underwhelming stretch for him as a member of the Flames. So that was one of the primary reasons Mantha was brought in, because they felt like his shooting mentality, his shot, his heaviness, all that type of stuff can really complement Huberdeau on the other side and whoever the center would end up being on that line. But, I think what it does now, and you feel weird talking about this, but this is the nature of pro sports. What it does is open up a top nine spot for, right now, a really exciting former first-round pick in Matt Coronato, who's playing the best NHL hockey of his career this season. After a rookie year where he was up and down between the American League and the NHL, and I think for a lot of Flames fans, when they signed Mantha, the big worry was it going to block a young player? And for so many people in this market who want this team to go younger, blocking a young player was frustrating for a lot of people. So, that block is now removed, and I think the opportunity has never been larger for a guy like Matt Coronato to grab it, walk through a wide open door, and see if he can be a top nine NHLer for the rest of his career and certainly for the rest of this season, if he can be a guy who sticks now as a top nine right winger. That is the biggest impact that it makes on the Flames. That door is wide open now for him.
Pat, the thing that I was most wrong about in assessing the Pacific Division leading into the season was that I thought this Calgary team was going to be a mess. And instead, they're not just playing winning hockey, but they're playing disciplined, spirited hockey. how has this come to pass? And should we be talking a little bit more about the work that Ryan Husk has done here?
We should. Now, I do want to, you'll like my memory on this, Drancer. I do want to call back to 10 years ago when Thomas Drance, I believe at the time working for the Nation Network, coined the term Calgary regression. And that was during the year where the Flames and Canucks met in round one, and the Flames shocked the entire NHL with how they were able to, you know, come back in games, find ways to win, all that type of stuff. And then what happened?
They never really won another playoff series with that core, or they won one more playoff series with that core. So I don't know. That was a take that I actually think I was right about. It just took a long time for me to be right.
But you know what? I think you were too, in that they were way above their skis, way over their skis that year. And so I look at this group, and there's some really promising trends with them that you can't take away from them. Like that game in Vancouver to open the season, the fact that they came back from the 4-1 deficit, won the game in overtime, all of that built a whole ton of belief. And they had a ton of belief going into the regular season. Then they win a game like that against an arch rival in their building. That kind of set the tone for the season. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a tone they've been riding for the rest of the year. They do play really disciplined, spirited. I like those words, Drancer. They work their tails off. They are committed. There's maybe been one, two games this year where you can point at an effort and say, yeah, you know, maybe the details, maybe the effort, maybe the commitment to what they need to do wasn't there. Otherwise, that's been a constant for them. And I think that it's going to be a constant throughout. But you take a look at, you know, some of the underlying metrics, specifically the way they control games at 5-on-5 and the fact that they have spent so little time in the lead. Like the fact that they led for about 30 minutes against Los Angeles last night in that 3-1 win was something we haven't seen in ages. It was just the third time the Flames took a game to the third period with a lead. I believe still they're 31st overall in terms of the amount of times or amount of time that they've led this season, and they're top 10 for the amount of time that they've trailed this season. So, you know, one of the things that we talked about a decade ago in this city while that season I mentioned was going on is how sustainable is this? Well, we're not even a quarter into the season. We don't know the answer, but I can be fairly confident that if they continue to put themselves in spots where they have to battle back, when they put themselves in spots where they don't hold a lot of leads going into the third period, when they're always playing from behind, eventually that's going to come back to bite them, and eventually that's going to be a whole lot more difficult to kind of dig yourself out of. So there are definitely warning signs that this team needs to correct, but at the same time, the central parts of what they're doing, their commitment, their work ethic, their belief, their hard work, all that type of stuff, That stuff needs to remain, and I think will remain. What'll be interesting to see if some of the other trends that maybe don't end up painting things in as positive a light, if those things can start to come around as well. And we've talked a lot about their starts, how many times they've fallen down in first and second periods. Their power play is atrocious. Their penalty kill has been very suspect as well. Like, there are some things that they 1,000% need to figure out here. But at the same time, they're three games above 500. They've built themselves a decent playoff cushion. And so there's some belief built. And I'm curious to see how that belief translates as they try to correct some things they clearly also need to correct moving into the second quarter here.
Yeah, and I think sort of where I've landed, Pat, is that at the very least, like, what I'm convinced of is that this is sustainable in that I think at the very least, I'm pretty confident at this point that this Calgary Flames team is at least in that, like, Kraken tier in this division. Like, at the very least, they're going to be right there with the Kraken by game 82 and probably have a puncher's chance, if things continue to go their way a little bit, of sort of making the playoffs even with this group, which is, you know, in my view, an incredible accomplishment. One of the reasons that I'm so impressed by it, Pat, to be totally honest with you, is we very rarely see teams tear down a roster as veteran as quickly and as dramatically as Calgary has over the last 16 months. And so you've got this sort of mix of players where you've got old guys who did not sign up to rebuild and young guys who are still sort of finding their way in this league. And that's such a volatile, like, we've seen that script time and time again, especially in this market, and we know that it can go badly and often does, more often than not, does in this league. And somehow they've been able to not just hold it together, but seem like they're, you know, Rick Tocchet used the word connected as a team, and I thought that was a good way of putting it too. Like, they are still seeming to work for Huska and company, which is one of the reasons I think among sort of Jack Adams candidates in the West, he's got to be at the front of the list.
Well, and you know, guys, the thing about Huska is since he took over as head coach last season, that is one thing that has been evident and notable the whole way through. I mean, even last year, amidst all that uncertainty with Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm, so on and so forth, and you know whether or not they were going to stay or go and when they were going to be traded, the team still worked for this coach last year. And, you know, it obviously didn't end up the way they wanted. They ended up, once all those guys were dealt, 17 points out of a playoff spot. But they worked, and that was a constant last year. And so I give a lot of credit to, first of all, like I think that kind of the tone for this season was set right before training camp when Craig Conroy, who I think even admittedly the general manager said maybe last year he could have calmed the waters a little bit with all of the uncertainty had he come out with a similar message. But, you know, it was a little more difficult with all the guys on expiring contracts. Well, this year he did that. He came out and said, look, we've got our core six of veterans. It's Rasmus Anderson, it's Mackenzie Weegar, Jonathan Huberdeau, Nazem Kadri, Blake Coleman, and Captain Michael Backlund. And these guys are our six veterans. They're not going anywhere. We're not shopping them. We don't feel like we want to shop them. And in our 3 to 5 year plan, these six guys are going to be key in getting us from point A to point B. And so I think that message really set a tone, not just inside that locker room, but also kind of set a tone for the perception on the outside from other general managers and other teams. Like, okay, this Flames team is done kind of being in a super state of flux right now. And so, and I also think what Craig Conroy and Ryan Huska did was to those veterans is say, guys, we need you to be the driving forces. And for guys like Weegar, for guys like Anderson, hell, even for guys like Kadri, you know, they've been put in spots to be the most important players on the team for kind of the first times in their career. I mean, Nazem Kadri's a hell of a hockey player, but, you know, whether it was in Toronto or Colorado, he was always more of a complimentary guy. And Weegar and Anderson have been kind of, you know, number two, number three defensemen as opposed to being top pair defensemen and those types of things. And so I think kind of selling it to these veterans that way, like, hey, we believe in what we're doing. We think we can get there in 3 years, 5 years, whatever the timeline might be. We want to stay competitive while that's happening. We need you to lead the way. I think it really has helped. It really has kind of set a culture that they have continued to build on throughout the year. And one other thing that I think can't go can't go unnoticed in this conversation is how strong Calgary's goaltending has been based on maybe what the expectations have been. I mean, they've gotten pretty solid goaltending from both Dan Vladar, who's going to start tonight at Rogers Arena, and Dustin Wolf, who was outstanding against LA, especially in the back half of the game last night. So you tack on some NHL-level goaltending, which I don't know if people were confident on the outside they were going to get to that belief, and a really good kind of dynamic inside the room, and you get a surprising first 16 games of the season where the Flames find themselves in a playoff spot.
You know, and that point, Pat, you make about kind of identifying the six veterans that they're not shopping, they want to stick around and, you know, help them come out on the other side of this rebuild. It's going to be really fascinating, I think, to see what Calgary chooses to do going in, you know, looking way ahead to the trade deadline this year. They've been such aggressive sellers recently, but we've also heard that, you know, they could be looking to add a young center if the price is right, if the fit is right there. And the fact that they're off to this good start and, you know, hanging around a playoff position makes it even more interesting to see what they might do. What are you kind of expecting? Are they still going to look to sell off pieces? Will they even maybe be buyers? What are you kind of expecting to see from that perspective for Calgary here?
Well, I think with Mantha done for the year, I think the general consensus was he was going to be one of those pump and dump candidates, sign him on a one-year deal, see if you can flip him for something at the deadline. Obviously, that's not going to happen now with his season-ending injury. I still think that gentleman you're quite familiar with, Andre Kuzmenko, I think Kuzmenko's a guy that they are very open to doing the same thing with. If there are takers, he's had a very up-and-down, inconsistent season, generally frustrating. But if there are takers for Kuzmenko, I think they'd be willing to make a deal there. Otherwise, I think it comes down to where things are in the standings. Are they still competitive when we move towards February, March, or have they fallen back a little bit? And I think that'll dictate kind of some of the conversations they have with their veterans. And I think specifically guys like Rasmus Anderson and Blake Coleman, who have contracts that are a little closer to expiring compared to the likes of Mackenzie Weegar or Kadri or Huberto, who are more longer-term deals. And so I think that that then becomes interesting. I don't think Craig Conroy at any point is going to be actively selling any of those vets, but I do think that all of a sudden, if there's a phone call made and say, hey, you know, Rasmus Anderson's got one more year left on his contract, do you know what he wants to do? And they're still uncertain if he's willing to sign long-term, which I still think is the best outcome for the organization. Well, maybe then there is a little bit more thought given to, okay, let's see if there is a deal that can be made for a guy like Anderson. And then on the addition side of things, I think, you know, there's been a lot made about Craig Conroy being interested in a young center, which he is, but that's not really new. He was interested in that in the summertime. He was interested in that at training camp, and he remains interested in that on November 12th because they do have a shortfall right now at center ice. I mean, they're trying either Martin Pospisil or Yegor Sharangovich, who have been nothing but NHL wingers throughout their career. They've been trying them at center and hasn't necessarily worked in the most successful fashion. And on top of that, the one area as they try to get younger and better and turn back into a contender, the one area that they are extremely thin at organizationally beyond Kadri and Backlund, who are 34 and 35, is center ice. And so they've got Connor Zeri, who I think can play center, but has not played center yet. They've got some potential young players that could project to, you know, second or third line centers down the road, but they don't have any high end guys that slot in and can potentially do that down the road. So if they can acquire a guy like, and it's not going to be a franchise number one center. You don't get those guys in mid-season trades. But if they can find whether it's a Connor McMichael or a Phil Tomasino or a Shane Pinto or a Peyton Krebs or a Dylan Cousins, or you go down the list, there's a number of different names you could point to. Plug them in to fill their vacant center ice hole right now because they've only got three natural centers and that they can grow with. I think all those guys are 23 years old or 24 years old that I just mentioned that they can grow with and kind of fits the age range the Flames are looking at, because those type of younger NHLers, not prospects, but not established veterans, those guys have always been part of Conroy's plan here. And I think that that remains the case going forward.
Pat, really appreciate the time and the insight as always. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the game tonight.
Always enjoy it. Thanks as always.
That is Pat Steinberg covering the Flames for our sister station out in Calgary, Sportsnet 960, weighing in on a very interesting start to the season for Calgary. And, yeah, the point he made about just the roster and the mix of veterans and the mix of young players and everything, and you kind of look at the guys they have on that team right now, there's like at least four distinct eras of Flames hockey represented, right? Like Michael Backlund played with Jerome Iginla 15 years ago on the team. You know, Rasmus Anderson was part of the, you know, Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan young players come up era. And then you have obviously Huberto and Weegar who it came in, and Kadri, right, where they were like, okay, let's try to keep this going. And then you've got the young talent that they've started to acquire after that blew up, and they've started to try to pivot and go in the rebuild direction. So it's one of those things, I think maybe why one of the reasons why it was easy to write them off before the season is it is just such an atypical roster. It doesn't fit cleanly into any of the kind of archetypical NHL rosters that we tend to see, right? It's all over the place.
No, it was a roster that I thought had a lot more downside, and this is what to watch for tonight, in my view anyway. Like, Mikael Backlund, I think, is just such a hard night every night for the top of your lineup guys. Like, he will have the puck. He will have the puck when he's on the ice. You will not. and he's just going to play within the hash marks and play simple, frustrating hockey. He is truly the most underrated defensive center. He's the most underrated elite defensive center in hockey right now by a fair margin. Like, he is genuinely, no doubt about it, an elite, elite defensive center. So your top of the lineup, this star-driven league that we've found, mm-hmm. the Flames between Backlund, between Vladar and Wolf, both of whom have performed well, and between Uyghur and Anderson, two relatively high IQ defenders that can hold up in tough minutes. I mean, there's not an easy night for your stars against the Flames. Even if they're going to be tired tonight, that's still going to be true. And so I think when you combine that with some depth skill, right? Because if you can hold serve at the top of your lineup, then Connor Zeri and Sharon Govich and, you know, some of the depth scoring pieces that you have down lineup are capable of doing damage on any given night. That makes you a tough out. If you can also pivot and drag a game into the muck with Rooney and Klapka and Martin Pospisil, right? Just make a night any given game annoying for the opposition. And Calgary has the bodies to do that, the pests to do that. They've sort of got that weaponry in their toolkit as well. I'm not saying they're great, but I do think they belong in the same tier as the Seattle Kraken, and you know, within shouting distance of the LA Kings, which we kind of saw play out as Calgary beat LA last night.
And then they're going, yeah, the straight split in net with Vladar and Wolf have both started 8 games this year, right? And they're getting decent numbers from both of them. Good numbers from both of them. Looks like we'll see Vladar tonight here. Dustin Wolf played last night for Calgary, but again, not as if there's much of a drop-off, at least so far right now.
And that's too bad for us, because Dustin Wolf succeeds in net in a way that very few other NHL goaltenders do, and that makes him a ton of fun to watch. So, you know, we've seen Vladar already this season. I'm not trying to cast aspersions of Vladar, just that among NHL goaltenders that are genuinely fun to watch right now, Dustin Wolf's like very much at the top of that list for me.
All right, we'll talk more goaltending. Kevin Woodley is going to join us in the broadcast booth here at Rogers Arena. Always lots of stuff going on with Canucks goalies, so we'll chat to Woodley about that. Maybe a little bit about Calgary and some other things happening around the NHL too. That's next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz up in the broadcast booth here at Rogers Arena. Canucks game day. They're taking on the Calgary Flames tonight. We are live, of course, also from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
And Kevin Woodley will be along shortly. He's just filing a story, so we'll rag the puck until he arrives, which, you know, you and I are pretty good
classic
at.
Woodley. doing his job.
Classic Woodley, doing a thing that he's never done before.
Doing his job. Productively and efficiently and on time.
Yep.
Good for him. I'm excited, though. I mean, it's a fascinating time for Canucks goalies. And as Woodley walks in right now, we'll get him set up and we'll get him on the air here momentarily. But as I was just saying, you know, fascinating time for the Canucks goaltending situation. But it feels like it's almost always a fascinating time for the Canucks goaltending situation.
It is especially fascinating, however, at the moment. Kevin! How are you, sir?
I'm good. Is this thing on?
Yeah,
it is on.
I apologize. A little late. You know, as Thomas knows.
If I hadn't outed you, honestly, we would have played it off and no one would have been the wiser. So.
Editors make curious decisions. Yesterday, Dakota Joshua potentially playing on Thursday was not something I needed to follow up on. And then today, as I was walking up here, I got the email saying, could you send us a quick story on
blurb on Dakota Joshua's imminent return?
Yeah. So, anyways, delayed me.
Let's talk Artur Shelovs, first of all, because I think that's the most interesting part of this, even though the club's going back to Kevin Lankinen, who maybe had his first rougher start in a Canucks jersey on Saturday night. Now, in terms of Shelovs, though, the club, when they signed Lankinen, had a plan that they were comfortable, and in fact, plan A was to carry 3 goaltenders all season, and yet I don't think Shelovs has been at a level where they're going to consider that. Like, I think that plan is already more or less out the window. But it feels loaded to me that they're going right back to Lankinen, because it feels like, A, after Shelov's performed pretty well in that American League start. It felt like a good spot for him.
I thought there was a chance we'd see him tonight.
If he was going to be a big part of your plans for the rest of the season, don't you give him that Flames team that he sort of duffed it against on opening night to like exercise those demons, bounce back? He plays two games this week, and he's running out of opportunities with Demko's. Demko back at full practice to sort of make his case to remain on this roster, right?
Yeah, and it's kind of – I also do see the flip side, which Tocchet outlined to us today, was that Kevin Lankinen deserved the chance to bounce back from his first rough outing. And again, as Tocchet pointed out, not all on him, right? Like, it's funny.
It wasn't, but there were a couple that went through him in a way that pucks –
Oh, the happened. Last couple were low-danger chances, and there's been a few this year, low-danger. Been more mids than I think a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
The numbers have sort of trended after an absolute heater at the beginning back towards where he was last year, which is still a very high level.
Very good, yeah.
And huge value. But those last two, yeah, they undid his numbers, not just because it gets you to 7 and all of a sudden you're going from a 923 to something like a 905. Like, it's the thing, right? Like, I had a former NHL goalie walk me through why you should never judge a goaltender until he hits 20 games, because then the sample size is big enough to be sticky. And so you're trying to get to that 20-game mark without one of those nights. And it's amazing. All it takes is one of those to absolutely, not submarine, because he's still well above, 5 points above sort of league average or wherever league average is now. And we can all see how good he's been, right? Like, there's no questions. But it's funny how we'll take a look at Archer Shelov's numbers, sub-800, and quickly forget that he got the Devils game where they played as abhorrently, but for longer defensively, like odd man rush after odd man rush. And so, listen, I see both sides to this. I thought maybe they'd give Kevin the day off or the night off tonight, get Arturs fresh off having a start against the Flames, especially because Lankinen practiced and pretty much in full each of the past 2 days. Like, it was not him sharing in it with Archer Shelov, with Demko in closer to a full practice mode. It was Thatcher and Arturs and Ty Young, by the way. Which is a hilarious side note. Not good enough to play as a 20-year-old in the WHL, but first two wins in the ECHL and back on an NHL practice roster this week. It's hilarious how the goaltending world works. But he pretty much practiced in full. So if that was signs of fatigue in the third period, do you give him a rest? And at the same time, hey, he's earned the opportunity to bounce back, and that's the way they're going to go. And I think what we come to expect from Rick Tocchet as a player's coach.
100%. I do think, though, that it's so I'm not
– Both things can be true, though. You're right about running out of runway.
I'm not approaching it critically from the perspective of, is the club making the right call? I'm approaching it from the standpoint of, with Shelov's going down and performing well in the American League, if you – thought that at some point this season Shelov was going to be a guy you had to depend on, Shelov would go tonight. But I think they're at a point where Lankinen is getting like number one goaltender respect, and I think that just speaks volumes about what the pecking order, how the pecking order is shook out. Like, I think Shelov is out of trust and out of time.
It's also really easy to sort of give Lankinen a number one workload like he's never had before in the NHL level when you know it's not forever, right? You know you've got your number one coming back, and you're not worried about Kevin Lankinen in April right now because Thatcher's coming back. So I get that too.
But what do you
you're
know?
Right about Shelov's. Like,
but what do you know? Sorry, let me pick at this. What should they be approaching anything as if they have certainty about Demko? Like, shouldn't you be hedging
only,
given
only
how
they
uncertain?
Know. And at this
but,
point,
but
I don't think it matters.
Not.
Even if he comes back this in the couple of weeks, whatever the reporting has been, I think I've seen pretty much everything from him in the last 2 days of practice outside of maybe a reverse track with a lot of load into the left side. He's working off his post on the left side where the injury was. Like, he looks really close.
Yeah.
And so whether that progresses more smoothly than it did from maybe training camp and more in a more linear fashion, and he's really back. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter whether you are fully of the belief that once he's back, and this gives him a better chance of finishing the season than he had last year because he's starting later and because you've got Kevin Lankinen in here and you won't have to do what they did last year from, the All-Star break till the injury, which is play him at a 65-game pace. But also, like, Arturs can't just sit here and rot. He needs to go play either way, yeah. and it's not going to happen here. And so there's the luxury. You can say, like, they planned on carrying three. Yes, there are going to be some times where maybe they do to try and limit Thatcher's workload in practice, and if that's still the plan, I'm all for it. But Arturs, unless you're done with them, and again, given the fact that you think, look where they were last year and look who they ultimately ended up needing,
yeah.
you can't leave him sitting on the bench here and just practicing. He needs to get game reps in. Let's not forget that this is a guy who already lost an entire season during COVID
yeah.
when they couldn't find a place for him to play until finally putting him in the ECHL late in the season. I remember there was a loan to Manitoba
yeah,
where he didn't play a single game. If I'm not mistaken, I heard a story about their former goaltending coach in Manitoba actually going on the ice while the Jets were out there to tear into somebody for not getting him starts down there. It sort of made these legendary rounds. So, listen, I've said a lot. This is a tough start for Arturs. The Devil's game makes his numbers terrible, and I'm not sure that was all on him.
Yep.
He's going to have to dig his way out of this. He's still a young goaltender. He has time. Waivers isn't an issue. If you have time, use it. Get him down there playing. As hard as that might be for him, it's just the reality. He needs reps.
Yep.
He needs more reps and more reps playing. And the sort of the underlying thing, I don't think this would get into his head, but we've talked about this before. Like, the guy who believed in you, the guy who drafted you, the guy who got you to that readiness state in the playoffs last year isn't here anymore. That can't be easy.
Well, and even beyond, you know, the technical side of things, I mean, it must have felt really good for just to him to go down and have his first unqualified successful outing, right, as a pro this year. He won a game, and he stopped a bunch of shots. He had a .920 save percentage. Like, that's got to be huge for his confidence after the tough first few games at the NHL level.
You can talk all you want about process and practice. The reality of most practices for a National Hockey League goaltender is they're not for them.
Yeah.
It's not about them. It's their targets. They're out there, you know, facing shots from places on the ice with time and space that most guys won't get in an entire season more than – you know, a couple times, and they're seeing it repeatedly. Like, it's a tough – practice can be a very tough environment, even when you've got a goaltending coach as experienced and as good as Marco Terenius, to make sure you have your drills to build confidence. The rest of practice is a pretty tough place to build confidence. So, yeah, you can't understate how important it would be for him to go down and get those minutes. And yet, I do believe that this is a kid that has a lot of internal confidence and belief. And obviously the start he's had and not getting to play will challenge that. But one of the big things that led to the belief that if maybe not everyone in the organization, Ian Clark had in this kid, was between the ears so much as between the pipes. There's all the physical tools, but it was the approach. And we saw it in the playoffs, like in that spotlight. Was it perfect? No. But, I mean, you think of the 1-0 shutout in Game 6 in Nashville in that moment. Yes, they defended really well, but when they needed him, he didn't fold under that spotlight. Same within Latvia for Latvia in the World Championships. Like, so that part is, we can always see between the pipes what goes on. We can't see between the ears. We look for little signposts along the road. And all Arturs has done to this point is show you don't need to worry about me between the ears.
I just wonder, do you create a situation where you've got this back-to-back on the weekend possibility based on what we're sort of seeing from Demko at practice and what's been reported about the timeline that maybe he returns at some point on that road trip where, you know, say he plays against Nashville, maybe he plays against Chicago, but if that outing goes poorly for him and then he's off the roster and then you need him again at some point, it's like, it just feels like a really tough spot.
He's
going to be put now in a position where if he played tonight, it's one thing. But if he plays that one sort of one game this
and
weekend,
it doesn't go well.
Yeah.
And Tockett hinted that it could be Thursday against the Islanders.
Right. So reading between the lines, you thought that seemed like a possibility?
I thought today was a possibility. The fact it didn't happen, I wouldn't have looked at the Islanders, although got to be honest with you, I haven't looked at their
three. If you give them the Islanders, right?
Yeah, and just they, you know, they seem to. Obviously,
well, I like that. I think they should do that. I think he should get 2 of 3 this week.
It wouldn't be a terrible idea. I thought it would be 2 of 4 starting tonight. Or again, I didn't think. And this is, we have to be careful. Like you said, this isn't us like second guessing.
No.
Because the decision makes perfect sense in both regards.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I could see it either way.
Yeah,
I could see it either way. Depends on, you know, and it'll be important for him. You're right. And they're probably, with that comes extra pressure, knowing that. But again, the one thing this kid's done all along is shown that pressure isn't really the issue. There are other things, an issue isn't even the right word, but we've talked about the things in his game that need to improve, and they're all things that require, I don't know, experience and actual real-world touches in a real-world, you know, NHL environment where, by the way, traffic and tips and all this stuff, I just had this conversation with Jason LaBarbera, like, dude, it's getting real hard out there as a goaltender to find pucks, and teams are being so good and deliberate about how they're making it hard and harder than it's ever been.
The Canucks, however, on Saturday against the Oilers, did not make life hard enough for Stuart Skinner, not even close.
No.
I'm curious to know, because you're always watching these games, you know, you're focused on, you naturally see the game from a goalie's perspective as one yourself, but because of that, you're also so attuned to quality looks that I often am curious to get your thoughts on this. It looked like the Canucks had maybe a couple of quality looks all game long against the Oilers. What did you see from Vancouver from an attacking perspective Saturday night?
And even, like, say the goaltender's eye is one thing, but I'll always go back to the analytics and look at clear sight because that's objective, right? Doesn't have my goalie union glasses on.
Speaking my language.
I think my favorite thing is actually, like, a little aside here, but my favorite thing is when they don't match my eye test. And you're like, wow, why? And then you start to dig into it. I love that stuff. So, no, they didn't get a lot of quality looks. And, you know, I just don't think it was a great – it started in their own end. They had some moments in the second period where they generated pressure in zone time and got a couple looks. But, no, they didn't get enough quality looks. And then by the time it was too late, right? When they had to press and force, it was too late. And, again, interestingly enough, and I had this conversation, I asked Rick this question the other day and then had this conversation with a couple of the defensemen about where they're at in terms of net front defending. Because, as we said, like, first 8 games of the season, they were at the bottom of the league.
Yeah.
Then they trended. We all said we weren't worried about it because we knew this was the identity it would get fixed. And then they trended up for 4 games. And then so was the Edmonton game, which how many pucks went in, just spilled to a guy at the side of the net unchecked? Yep.
The inner slot defending was not good.
So the question was, is this, you know, you had that horrific start, and then everything trended up. They were still bottom third in the league, but after that game, they were down into the, in the bottom third, not 32nd
average,
anymore.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that, like, to me, that's where that game was won and lost. As much as we talk about them not getting looks, and talked about how they had something that was working, then they deviated from it. Talking to the defensemen, who we often sort of credit for the size and reach and how they've built this defense for taking care of the front of the net, it was interesting to hear how much they talked about all 5 guys.
Mm.
And that when guys aren't where they're supposed to be, that's when we can... Talkie talked about puck watching in that game, and you're going to have nights where the puck is just going to bounce to somebody else's stick, and maybe there's some of that. But how much of the defenseman's ability to be in their spot and not puck watch depends on where other forwards are going to be. And I thought in that game, and the guys on the team agreed, in that game they got away from it again. And so it's sort of a constant, and this will be, you know, when I talk about not judging goalie numbers until they get to 20 games, you know, like, I think we have to be a little careful with some of the numbers. It's still, the season's still relatively young, and there's been solid performances. They've taken care of business against lesser
lights.
I know a lot of people wanted to point to the LA game as, you know, hey, that was a good team. I'm not entirely convinced yet. but also we forget, like, that circumstances matter. LA was coming off an Eastern Conference swing. First game at home. That's always tough. Despite what Calgary did in the same circumstances last night to the Kings. Tonight's a scheduled loss for the Calgary Flames.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 5 games in, like, 8 days in 3 time zones and 5 different barns. That's borderline unfair, frankly.
Yep.
And the Canucks, to their credit, have taken care of all of those. But you look at Edmonton, you look at the New Jersey game, and we all know they're capable.
The Carolina game, too.
The Carolina, too. Hey, listen, the only reason they get a point out of Carolina is because
Kachet a wild man.
He went crazy in the third period.
As we talked about,
yes.
The moment that play happened, Kevin, you and I both leaning over the press box to catch each other's eyes and just, like, pointing and pointing at each other was so funny.
Because we had talked about the crazy poke checks and what he has a tendency to do. But, like, not just the poke check moment, but the unscreened Quinn Hughes point shot, right? Like under the blocker, right? Like that can't go in at the NHL level. And so I think that clouds your judgment a little bit that they got a point out of that game. And so this, we know they're capable, but the little habits that have helped them get wins against the lesser lights need to stay when under pressure, when meet pressure with pressure against the better teams. And to this point, I think it's fair to say they have been inconsistent in their ability to do that. And so, you know, there's a few tests on this trip. I mean, the Rangers coming in next week towards the end of it. Where's the focus? Can we see that game? And, again, small sample early season. To me, it's still a work in progress. And, again, the reason you don't worry about the blips is because of the way this coaching staff approaches it. You know they, too, are building.
Yeah.
And that they recognize it's like talking about JT Miller. He doesn't worry about him not being at his best because he knows he'll push himself to get there. You know, this coaching staff recognizes that, and they've talked about, you know, talked about the other day, like, yeah, our net front defense was really bad at the beginning of the season, and so we trended up, and then we had one game where it was a blip. Well, that's going to happen. Now we're going to keep, it's all about building around here, and I know it sounds so cliched, but every little detail under this staff right up the management group, like that's what they're doing, right? So let's see how the goaltending decisions, getting back to Arturs and what they do with him in the long run, match that. Because you do have to watch your NHL interests, and if that includes having Arturs here to make sure that Demko's workload is monitored so that he gets to the end of the season from a practice perspective, so be it. But make no mistake, for the sake of his growth, and if you do see a future, Arturs Seelofs needs to play this year.
And just on Demko, and I know earlier in our conversation, Kevin, you mentioned kind of you're seeing a lot of what you would want to see from him, you know, to make it look like a return is imminent. But it's always complicated by the fact that this is a unique injury, right? It's the popliteus, so we don't really know. It's already happened in fits and starts. But based on what you've seen from Thatcher Demko at these practices, if it was like a quote-unquote normal goalie injury, I mean, what would you be thinking, you know, a week away, 10 days? Like, is it that close? How would you put it into those kinds of terms for us with Demko?
I think that would be fair. Their sort of return-to-play protocols don't look exactly the same in terms of the goalie drills. And also, I think they're doing some of them before we're in the building. So right. I haven't seen them all. I guess just the reality. Like I said, for the most part, like we're talking live fire. He was doing a breakaway drill the other day. And then not just stopping the breakaway, but that if the breakaway went to his left, he was recovering, swinging into that post in a reverse, right? Like loading into that left side post and pushing off of it, which is how the injury occurred. To me, that's always, this isn't specific to Demko. It's the same thing with Joseph Woll when he was in here with the Maple Leafs last year as part of his recovery from a high ankle sprain. The last step is always the post work because it's the most demanding physically, especially on an ankle or a knee. And so the fact I see him doing that in an uncontrolled environment, like it's one thing to see it. The first step is usually with the goalie coach.
Yes.
So you know when and where and where the next puck's going and you don't. But to do it in an uncontrolled environment where there's live fire and like to me, that looks really, really close. Whether that's a week or 10 days, only they know, only he knows how it feels afterwards, all those things. But he looks like he's doing almost everything that a goalie would need to do before. You remember Game 7 against Edmonton.
Yep.
I watched him that morning, and the pace and intensity was more, it was at a higher level than what I've seen here. But again, that's just because I haven't seen everything here. But that morning, I remember saying as we're walking, I'm like, that looks like a goalie that could play right now. Like, he was doing everything, and at the nth degree of pace and speed and pounding into the posts and things like that. And I haven't seen enough of those drills to know whether they're doing them all, but the fact he's out for live fire against a dynamic offensive environment tells me they've probably checked that box off already to be here, and that means really close.
Dan Vladar looks like he's going to get a chance to go again tonight for Calgary, and we were talking, you know, the goalie tandem there has been really solid,
yep.
Right?
Eight love how they're handling it to it.
Exactly.
Yeah, like back and forth.
Literally Vladar, right down the middle.
Well, Vladar gets a shutout. So we talk about Lankin and deserving the bounce back tonight. Vladar gets a shutout, so they break the cycle and give him two in a row, but then give Wolf the next two in a row.
Yeah.
Well, so I was saying that I'm disappointed I don't get to see Wolf live just because he's winning in a way that we don't see a lot of other NHL goaltenders win in goal these days. Stylistically,
you mean just, under 6 feet?
Under 6 feet. Some of the ways that he compensates it's super exciting to watch. Can you go into further detail on why that's my perception? Because I don't know. I just watch it and I'm like, my this looks different. But I'm sure you have the actual answer for why.
It looks different because he's small, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, that's the reality. Like, you just don't see it anymore, yeah. right? Like, yeah. outside of Saros. And, you know, here's the interesting thing. Like, there are things he does that will look different. His tracking and his patience on his edge is at another level. He's explosive laterally. But the cliche is normally, oh, he's small. He's got to be aggressive. Well, the biggest step in his game in the last 2 years, going from first-year American Hockey League Goalie of the Year to second-year American Hockey League Goalie of the Year and MVP, is actually to be less aggressive positionally. Mm. Like, you just can't play, unless you're Kochetkov on a poke check chance, you can't play outside the blue crease. Like, you just can't. I don't care how fast you are. And if you watch Wolf and break down the video, it looks different because of his size and because of his patience and because of his explosiveness. But tactically, he's not any more aggressive. That's a stereotype that I kind of laugh at because I hear it a lot about Saros. Oh, he's got to be out on that. He's got to be out on that. Like, no, man. Like, when UC Saros finally broke in with the Nashville Predators, Pekka Rinne, who had, like, what, 6 or 7 inches on him, was like, oh, crap. Look at it. Like, that guy's less aggressive than I am. And Pekka actually took another step in his career after watching UC and backing in and sort of playing less aggressively. Like, so the patience on the edges is the one that really, yeah. but, and there are things around the post at his size. He can't tuck into a reverse like a Demko can, like a Vladar can. He's got to overlap. And so that's going to look different, Lynn. It's going to look, it's the quietness and efficiency with which he moves from those positions, but the explosiveness and the fact it requires extra moving parts to do so
right.
makes it almost look busy. But he's the most efficient, busy-looking goaltender you'll ever see. So yeah. it, as dynamic as it looks, it is wrapped up in this biomechanical sort of tracking to body movement that, frankly, is, I don't say unmatched in the NHL, because I think the smaller guys have to have that skill, but there are very few who do it
yeah.
as well as he does it.
It's that's potentially why, special.
Yeah, absolutely. And the irony is right in this building, he was almost never picked.
Yeah, wild. Absolutely wild.
Hey, and listen, the Calgary Flames have an eye for this stuff. Like, whether it's that pick mm-hmm. or for all the focus on the two up here, Devin Cooley, who I talked a little bit about, like, being more of a, I liked him as a project starting the American Hockey League. He is killing it down there and is showing very much that he has some NHL upside.
And still hopefully delivering the nihilistic bangers postgame.
Oh, he's, there is no better postgame interview.
An incredible quote.
Between that and his pet bunny, he's the best.
You're the best, Kevin Woodley. He is Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. And, of course, here on 650, he is a presentation of White Rock Hyundai. Visit the showroom on King George in White Rock or WhiteRockHyundai.com. Thanks for doing this, Woodley.
My pleasure. They have a whole bunch of Ioniq 5s, which I am driving right now, and some, for loyalty people, some special rates on the – it is an awesome car. Ask anybody who from 650 that I've given a lift to. It is awesome. You can find me napping outside Rogers Arena this afternoon.
There you go. Thank you, as always, Kevin. Always appreciate it.
We'll come bang on your windshield
absolutely.
With a maglite.
Heated seats. Come have a nap with me, boys.
Sounds delightful.
It does, actually.
All right, we got one more segment coming up here. Before we go to break, it's time to celebrate the return of hockey season with McDonald's Canada Game Day Deals. Satyar Shah and Dan Riccio give you the chance to score a $100 McDonald's gift card on Canuck Central that you can use to score a Big Mac, McChicken or Filet-O-Fish game day deal for just $4 plus tax on any Vancouver Canucks home or away game day this season only through the McDonald's app. Download the McDonald's app to score great deals and earn my McDonald's rewards towards free McDonald's. Final segment of Canucks Talk next here on Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live at Rogers Arena on a Canucks game day, live from the Kintec studio, of course. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Canucks taking on the Calgary Flames tonight here at Rogers Arena. And, of course, Jonathan Lekker-Mackey looks set to make his NHL debut. Top prospect for the organization. Obviously had a lot of hype in training camp. Got a pretty good run with the team. Seemed like he maybe even would have a chance to break camp with the team. Ends up going down to Abbotsford. And then, yeah, we all know the shot rate, the goal scoring that he demonstrated there. So with Brock Besser's absence, Dakota Joshua not quite ready. We'll see how long of an NHL opportunity it is. But going to make his NHL debut tonight for the Canucks. And for more on that and the rest of the storylines going into tonight's game against the Flames, let's hear from Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, we had a couple of good days of practice, worked on a few things. You know, these are the type of games, you know, you're playing a team back-to-back. I think Calgary's played, they've played a bunch of games. They've had some miles on the plane, and ours have been pretty light. So you expect our team to be, you know, have a lot of energy tonight. I mean, I do expect them to have a lot of energy tonight.
Starts are something that you guys are hoping to work on, especially heading into tonight's game. How do you want to see the team come out in that first 20 minutes?
Stick to the game plan. Play aggressive, but stick to the game plan. I think that's something that we got to get to right from the beginning of the game. That's what I'm looking for tonight.
What do you look at tape when you see the Flames?
A fast team. They use the weak side a lot. They're very good at using the weak side a lot. We've talked about that. They got some good players. They got some good skilled players. I think Kadri's. I like the way I was watching a bunch of games. Kadri looks good. They look like a team that's connected.
With Josh not quite ready to come back and recall, yeah. Baines, did you just slog in on that line for anything?
Yeah, Baines will go with Hoggy and Rats. And then I know some of you will probably ask me, there's a good shot. Maybe Dakota will play it Thursday, but he's trending in the right direction.
We keep asking you about Brock, but we don't know whether you're getting updates or whether there's nothing to report yet.
There's really nothing to report. You know, with these things, you hope he's gaining 3-4% better every day. That's the way you got to look at these things.
Rick, are you able to just confirm whether or not he's in protocol?
Who's that?
Brock.
I can't confirm, no. And I don't even know that, all that stuff, yeah. I'll find out.
With regards to your goaltending and Lankinen
play? Yeah, definitely.
And was there any thought to, or sort of, not, I'm sure there was, over the next six games and then you've got a pretty compressed road trip, we know Thatcher seems to be getting close. How do you sort of think about spotting Shelov some time in the NHL over the next week?
Yeah, no, he's got to play. You know, he's a guy that he's had a couple of tough starts. He went down to Abbotsford, had a solid effort. He's practiced his butt off. He's a possibility for Thursday. You know, it's November. You know, we got to start, we got to look, get guys' confidence and stuff like that. I don't think by sitting him on the bench is giving him confidence. So we'll kind of spot him when we feel he's ready to go.
Is there some tough question, other side of the coin, for Kevin, sort of maybe his first tougher outing in a Canucks uniform on Saturday? Do you want to go back to a guy, sort of handle him like a number one, given what he's given you so far?
Yeah, he deserves a play. But like I said, you know, even if he had Demko or, you know, Hellebuck, you know, he plays a ton. You know, like, I know everybody's saying, why do we play him against the Jersey game? I mean, you know, he's tired too. Like, it's hard to play four or five, six games in practice. So the reason why, we got to make sure that, you know, we've had somewhat of a light schedule, but we got to make sure that, you know, Lanx is fresh too. You know, we just can't keep grinding him either.
Was there some thought to play Shelov, seeing he played Sunday at Abbotsford, but then again, Lankinen probably wants to get back to where he was after the third period on Saturday.
Well, I think for me, Shelov's had a couple of really good tough practices. Then he played in Abbotsford. Okay. You know, I thought that maybe was a little too much of a turnaround. Plus, Lankinen deserves to get back in the net. Yeah. You know, he wants to get in there. Like I said, and I'm not blaming Lanx last game at all. I mean, he hung in there. It was 3-2, and obviously Edmonton took the game over.
Rick, how do you handle young players making their NHL debut? Yeah. Do you sit them down and have a chat with them? Do you just let them go on instinct and the reasons that they're here, like they've earned the opportunity? Like, how do you handle Lekker-Mackey?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I don't like to throw too much at him. I mean, we have some system stuff we want to give him, but I'm not going to sit him down the next couple of days and overload him. I think there's one or two points. Let him enjoy the day. Let him practice with players. And you're hoping like a JT Miller grab him. Hey, on these situations, well, I shouldn't say hope. They do. Quinn Hughes. Hey, how to handle certain situations. So it's almost like you give him a little pieces here. But the only advice he gave him, we had a two-on-one drill yesterday, and he was trying to pass. And I said, just shoot it, man. You're the shooter. Don't worry about it. Guys aren't going to be mad if you pass the puck or if you shoot the puck. So that's the only advice I gave him yesterday is be a shooter tonight.
Did they have a solo skate way back in your day when you played your first game? Is there such a thing?
They didn't do that. No, not back then. I don't even know what they did back then. I have no idea. But I think that's the common.
Talk about the systems. How different is the system in Vancouver compared to the system in Hamilton?
I have to say, with Manny, I bet you we're 85-90%. I don't want 100%. I don't believe in that. I think Manny's an up-and-coming coach. He should have his own creativity. But I think for D-zone coverage, neutral zone forechecks, I think we got to be on the same page, which he is. He likes what we're doing. But I think there's some offensive stuff, and there's some different ways of utilizing the system. I think he's got to go on his own. I think that's important. And plus, I can learn from Manny. Like, there's some stuff there when I watch, oh, man, we might try this, whatever play it is. So I think it's important that you communicate with the minor league teams, and you can learn from them, too.
What would be a successful big year for him? Just making the right decisions?
Johnny, I just want him, it's like all these young guys, you want them to have fun. I don't want him to just think too much and go to the spots that he thinks he should be. The effort's always got to be there. I'm sure this guy, he works hard. But I want to see him with the puck. I want to see him make some really creative plays and obviously smart plays, too. I think that's what you're looking for, the balance.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet weighing in on tonight's matchup with the Calgary Flames, talking a lot about Lekker Mäki making his debut, as you heard at the end there, wants him to have fun. Earlier, talking about how he doesn't want to throw too much in terms of systems and all that to remember, doesn't want to overload Lekker Mäki, just let him go out there, enjoy the day, and again, emphasizing, shoot the puck. No one's going to be mad if you shoot the puck. That is why you are here, and as you mentioned earlier as well, some praise for the Calgary Flames, right? Called them a fast team, got some good skilled players, and a team that looks connected, and Rick Tocchet also directly referenced the discrepancy in schedules for the two teams, right? The Canucks obviously have had a couple of days off since their last home game. Calgary, as Woodley was saying, have been all over the place, playing in five different cities now after this game tonight. And Tocchet saying, he expects his team to have a lot of energy. And I think the way that was phrased, it's an expectation, but also kind of a demand, right? It's like, well, the unspoken part of that is they better have the energy off the jump in a way they haven't in a lot of recent games, considering the very different circumstances coming into this game for the two teams.
And considering how Saturday went. This team was so good last year at bouncing back after tough performances. And, it was a tough performance on Saturday night. Like, that is the sort of performance you would think has left a pretty bitter taste in their mouths, and you'd expect the Canucks to respond accordingly, especially against a Flames team that has already beaten them once this year and beat them in pretty disappointing fashion on opening night. So, there's a lot of factors coming together to lead us to expect that the Canucks come out and put on one of those, what was the term that Rick Tocchet used? Their big boys were into it, was what he used to describe the McDavid performance on Saturday. Well, that's what we expect tonight, right?
Love it when the big boys are into it.
When the big boys are into it, that's when you're in for a game. You'd hope that the Canucks' big boys are into it tonight.
You would hope so.
I want to pivot off something that I also haven't had a chance to talk about.
Yes.
Because I was off yesterday, which is the Daniel Sprong trade.
Mm.
And I actually think there's an implication here that is worth dwelling on, especially given that Kuzmenko and, Pat Steinberg, they'd be open to moving him.
Yeah, he's had an up and down, frustrating season.
Man.
Like, really, you don't say.
That extension really went well. there's on Twitter right now, there's a Canucks bingo card being circulated among Canucks fans, and all of them are like Canucks player centric, but then in the corner there's one that's like Drance gets canceled. And of all the cancelable takes that I've had over the years, the Kuzmenko one's like the one that has aged best for me, I think.
Also, like, can you get canceled for bad takes?
I don't know, but it hasn't happened to me yet, so
apparently not. I guess not.
No, that's it's not that I'm wrong, it's that I'm not right yet.
Yes.
Anyway, So, Kuzmenko's in town. The club just traded Daniel Sprong. Mm-hmm. How are these two things linked to Jonathan Lekker Mäki? Well, they remind us of the extraordinarily high bar that you have to be able to hit as a two-way contributor, no matter how much you score, no matter how dynamic you are offensively, if you're really going to get minutes under Rick Tocchet. We've also seen that play out already this season for Nils Höglander in Vancouver, right? The expectation, the level of defensive acuity or skill or impact that you have to be able to maintain if you're not just going to score, but like play with JT Miller, get top 6 minutes, right? Be a major part of this team, is extraordinarily high. And we've seen a lot of players be extremely productive. Nils Höglander had, what, 24 goals last year? He's playing on the fourth line tonight, right? He was coming, too, in the early part of this year where it looked like he'd maybe cemented himself as a top six guy. It takes one bad game, a couple, like one lackadaisical back check against the, was it the Devils or the, no, the Hurricanes, against the Hurricanes, and boom. We've only really seen him get elevated back to the top six when Besser got hurt for two periods, for 40 minutes, you know? The bar is just so high that you have to leap over. So as we watch Lekkerimäki play tonight, I think that's a good place for us to focus a bit. Now, Lekkerimäki can get stuck in there. He can punch above his weight along the wall.
It all, I'll let you finish your thought.
Yeah, but there are ways for him to be impactful, even if he's not like a plus defensive contributor off the hop. But like that, I think, is going to be an area to put a fair bit of your focus. Is like, how is he hanging in a top-of-the-lineup role on JT Miller's wing in terms of the forecheck, in terms of helping on retrievals, in terms of driving through the neutral zone, in terms of doing some of those, I hate to use this cursed phrase, but little things, the details in his game, because we've seen it repeatedly under this head coach. If you can't hit a pretty high caliber of defensive play, it's really hard for you to get minutes.
I think the coaching process will be and almost has to be, though, at least slightly different when you're talking about 20-year-old prospect than it does with Daniel Sprong and Andre Kuzmenko, though, right?
Well, like, I don't know.
The approach has to be a little bit different when you're talking about somebody who you're projecting and hoping and you drafted with the intention of being a really important part of your team for a long time to come.
I mean, Kuzmenko, when Tocchet took over, was on his way to scoring 39 goals in his first NHL season. You know, like,
had just signed an extension.
And was on the side of the building. Nils Höglander, it's not like Nils Höglander's 28. He's 23 years old
sure.
and just signed a multi-year extension. You know, like, Sprong is different because it was a one-year deal
yep.
and less than $1 million and sort of a show-me contract. But, you know, the fact is, like, when the club decided to trade Sprong, there was obviously a lot of factors that went into it. Lekkerimäki and Baines trying to sort of free up space for them to be bigger contributors was part of the motivation. Definitely maintaining relationships, right? The idea that, hey, you know, Sprong, we're not going to elevate Sprong here. We're not going to elevate Sprong. We're not comfortable with it.
Yep.
He's not building trust at the rate that we'd hoped. And so let's send him somewhere, given that he's on this, you know, he's fighting for his career on a one-year deal. Let's send him somewhere where they're actually going to use him a little bit more. You know, that was part of it too. But like, the truth is that if there was a path for Daniel Sprong, like he just was not earning trust with the coaching staff, and there wasn't, it, like, internally, they didn't see a path to him ever earning trust with this coaching staff. That's defensive play. Like, that's the fundamental reason that Daniel Sprong got sent down the I-5 for nothing in return. So, you know, I just sort of look at this as, you know, not, it's just a canary in the coal mine moment, right? Like, there is a very high level of defensive skill, defensive accomplishment that you have to attain to play a major role under Tocchet. And just I think it's something that we should pay attention to and really wait in sort of monitoring Lekkerimäki's NHL debut and sort of his performance going forward. He's going to have to at least be fine if he's going to carve out a major role here for the rest of the season.
I just don't think...
And deliver on Dan Riccio's promise.
Well, he doesn't have to... Well, I mean, he does to get the
he
playing
does.
Time.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because he doesn't have to win the Calder, but to get the counting stats, yes, during the playing time. You just look at how quickly, I mean, Daniel Sprong played 9 games. Now, that's different, obviously, 1 year contract, all of those things. But even under Kuzmenko, it went south pretty quickly, right? Like, it was,
immediately.
You know, his minutes started to decrease.
Even
right?
down the stretch of that loss
exactly.
season, you knew.
Yeah. And then we come back and it's just not clicking. And it was pretty much by November, it was like, we can see the writing on the wall here. We know where this is going, even though he didn't get traded for a couple of months.
And even before, like, he wouldn't play shifts with the lead, and Beauvillier would take his shifts when they were leading, which was often. And, you know, he was playing fourth line minutes, even if he was taking line rushes beside Elias Pettersson, almost right off the bat to start that season, and he was still producing. So, Yeah, it's just something to bear in mind.
Like, but so I guess my point is that, like, it obviously when you have a prospect of this age, even if he is not playing up to that level right away, the relationship cannot deteriorate as quickly as it did with like Kuzmenko and Sprong.
Oh, you know what
I mean? And I'm not saying you're saying that's a possibility,
but
that's kind of what I mean, whereas like the process almost by definition has to look different, right?
Yes.
Because he's going to have more leash. Not that he's going to get top 6 minutes even if he's struggling defensively, but the where you go if you are struggling defensively is not, well, you're out of the organization or you're in the press box.
Oh, of course.
It's we're going to work with you in different ways, right? And one of the things I said on the show yesterday was I'm really fascinated to see how Rick Tocchet manages this. This is something we haven't seen since Rick Tocchet's been in Vancouver, right? A bona fide high-end prospect, first-round prospect, transitioning into the NHL, right? Who's earned this opportunity. And, you know, Hoglander's the closest thing, but obviously that's a totally different circumstance, right? He'd already played NHL games.
He'd already fallen out of favor with
the coach. Exactly. They send him down to the AHL. Like, it's a completely different situation in so many ways. And integrating a really exciting offensive prospect like this onto a team that, one, has high expectations for themselves, but also their calling card was defense last year. You know, that's a challenging circumstance for Rick Tocchet. And, you know, I'm fascinated to see how he handles it. He's aced pretty much every test he's faced here, or almost every test he's faced as Canucks head coach. And this is a new one, and there's so many different things that go into it. I think you're absolutely right that part of what we're going to be monitoring is this process of him earning trust. But just in general, like how Rick Tocchet chooses to approach it, when he yanks the minutes away, when he maybe extends a little bit more leash, that's all going to be really fascinating.
It is all going to be really fascinating. You're right to distinguish between the sort of developmental process of leveling up Lekaramäki's defensive game. It's just, I think it's worth keeping in mind, right, as we sort of set where our expectations are with Lekaramäki, that, you know, it's a non-negotiable, clearly.
Yep.
You have to be at a very high level defensively if you're going to play major minutes for this head coach.
Well, and I'll say
period.
This. Look, if they're bringing him in and there's at least, which I'm sure there is, as there should be, at least a partial thought that, hey, maybe he could be a no-doubt-about-it contributor for us in our middle six by the time the playoffs roll around, for that to be the case, he's got to earn that trust defensively.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely has to.
Well, and you know, I'd note, too, like, he has been outscored at the AHL level at 5-on-5. Like, they're, you know, there are reasons to believe that he should be passable defensively, but there are also some warning signs. -8 in 7 games. Now, plus minus, you know how I feel about it. Not a huge fan, but it's something that at least we should note as we go into this, right? This might be a cup of coffee, and that's totally fine. This might be a cup of coffee, and Lekaramäki becomes vital to the power play, and they have to keep him around, but in a more specialized role. I mean, there's so many different ways for this to go, but in terms of the bull case, the Dan Riccio bull case for Lekaramäki, in some ways I think it's almost less important that he like break games and as important, at least as important,
that he just gets minutes.
That he get minutes,
yeah.
And that he carve out, you know, that trust and that role, which as we've seen requires just a wildly high level. You know, not an unfairly high level. This team wants to win games,
mm-hmm.
but you know, there's a reason Pew Suter always wanders back into the top six, and there's a reason that Kuzmenko and Sprong and company haven't been able to stick. You know, the through line there is you better win battles, you better be in the right places, you better be sharp defensively if you're going to play for Rick Tocchet.
I want to throw this text past you quickly here, final few minutes, from Alex, the spreadsheet wizard, who says, apparently the Penguins are open for business. Do we think that Marcus Pettersson would be a fit? I know he's a left-handed defenseman, not right shot, but does it matter so much when we just plain old need more talent in the top four? That's from Alex the spreadsheet wizard. And yeah, I mean, Penguins season continues to go off the rails.
Yeah, they're too slow. I mean, I don't
yeah.
know what
to say. Like, I know Friege has name checked. Marcus Pettersson is a name who's going to be out there as well, and it's not, as Alex says, right, not the ideal, you know, in your mind's eye addition because they're on the left side maybe, but I think what he says there, not even just based on specifically about Marcus Pettersson, but just like you need to find more talent. Left shot, right shot, at a certain point you got to make it work, but just more talent.
Yeah.
Like more talent in the top four.
Seize the opportunities that present themselves. And if there's a path to getting Marcus Pettersson, but you get him into the lineup sooner, you know, like for example, you say Marcus Pettersson not an ideal fit because he's a lefty. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But Are you interested in a Marcus Pedersen, Tyler Meyer second pair with Carson Soucy and Brännström on the right side on the third pair?
Sure.
Are you both upgrading your third pair and your second pair in sort of making those moves? Right? I mean,
that's what I mean. There's got to be a willingness to get a little bit more creative, right? And like, okay, we're going to move more pieces around. It's maybe more than just a straight bring in a guy and bump Myers down to the third pair. You're going to have to think outside the box a little bit and get creative.
Well, and you know, you do have to be a pretty high-achieving right-handed defenseman to bump Myers down the lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason that every coach comes into Vancouver, and however they start the season, by the end of the year, Tyler Myers is third among Canucks defenders. Nice time, right? So, once again, like, you know, the right-handed piece that you're going to bring in that is good enough to bump Myers down the lineup, that's a pretty good piece. Like, that's a very, very good defenseman. So, look, I think the issues on defense have been pronounced enough. I think we saw it again against the Oilers, although the Soucy-Myers pair was probably pretty good, in my opinion, in that game relative to some of what the other Canucks defenders were able to contribute. But yeah, I mean, there's a straightforward path to upgrade your second pair, and in so doing, you bump a guy down the lineup and also upgrade your third pair.
Yeah.
I mean, you've stabilized the biggest issue for this team, which remains those non-Quinn Hughes minutes.
All right, that's the show for today. Lekkomäki makes his NHL debut tonight as the Canucks take on the Calgary Flames. We're back tomorrow. A crossover, Jason Buchla, always a fun show on a Wednesday. That's coming up tomorrow for us here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.